want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to episode 206 of the Geocaching Podcast, recorded live on June 1st, 2011. I'm your host, XPunkX, with
Daryl W. Fort.
If you want to participate in our show today, please call 724-444-7444. Our talkcast ID is 7525. You can also join live in our chat room and participate with other listeners, and that can be found at geocachingpodcast.com/live. Click the Join Now button to participate. We have a voicemail line. That number is 206-350-3GPS, and we're on Twitter at twitter.com/GCPodcast. 94% of cachers at some point will cache it when the sun has gone down. So grab a light and cache at night. Get all of your night caching supplies online from cacheatnight.com. Caching when the sun's up? No problem. We've got supplies for that too. Cache at Night is your geocaching source for trackables, including the unique glow-in-the-dark geocoin. Find us online at cacheatnight.com. Welcome back, Daryl. Now, we do have Head Hard Hat with us, but we've been having some technical problems tonight, so we may not actually get him on the line here. So, how have you been?
Oh, you know, it's been busy around here. Not so much the caching, though we have gotten a couple of caches, including walking about 8 miles and getting a cache after work tonight. Not all that was for the one cache, but, you know, we just kind of walked all over the place, got some caches, got some other stuff done, you know, how that kind of goes. But most of my time lately has been working on this Geo Woodstock 9 podcasting track. Yeah, I've got a bunch of new hardware coming in. I'm still trying to get some arrangements made. I've got to try to find a cargo van to get all this stuff down there. So, you know, I've been working on all that, and it's been taking up a lot more time than usual this time around.
Yeah, it seems like this time of year is busy, especially like, you know, you guys are doing the show at Geo Woodstock. It's a lot of prep work for that stuff.
Yeah, and I'm kind of bummed because my entire Geo Woodstock 9 time is going to be spent in that pavilion. You know, before the event actually begins, I'm going to be there setting up. After the event ends, I'm tearing down. And the entire time in between, I'm, you know, keeping up with the recordings that are going on all day and, you know, helping produce, engineer, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and now for me, I'm kind of back out of this kind of whole thing because I'm going to be gone that same weekend and going to be in Seattle, like I've said before. I'm going to do some stuff at Groundspeak itself, kind of get some video there. So hopefully bring you guys some stuff from there. But, you know, now I've recently received, and we'll do an episode on this later. I don't know if you've heard of this, Daryl, but there's a GPS unit called Bad Elf, and it's actually for an iPod or an earlier, like an iPod that does not have a GPS in it. You can just attach it to the dock connector in the bottom, and it makes your iPod a GPS. You can use it as a GPS. And so I've been testing that out, and you know, it's been, I just got it in the mail yesterday, and so I've only had it like one full day here. And I mean, I like what I've seen so far, but you know, I'll give you guys the full review later.
Yeah, there's a few of those out there, not too many. I kind of like that one because it's more like you're just, you know, quick throw it on dongle kind of thing. But we did the review earlier on the XGPS cradle from Duel, and that one really worked nicely. You know, I've still got this Magellan Tough case that's been giving me some problems, and they haven't been able to figure out what exactly is going on with it, I guess. I haven't heard anything back from them in a while, but that's why we haven't done the review on that. But it's a nice idea. If nothing else, $200-$300 is kind of expensive for it, but you know, this one is under $100. At the Bad Elf, was it called?
Yeah, it's Bad Elf.
Yeah, and then you were saying that was under $100. So for that kind of price, you know, it's not bad just to have as a supplement. And when you're using something like geocaching with Geosphere, it's going to bring up the closest caches, even if it's not, you know, terribly accurate. It really does help to make that paperless caching that much better.
Yes, definitely. And again, we'll have the full review on that here shortly, but I've got to get some time out in the field with it so I can actually see, you know, how it performs.
Now it's time once again for the GSAC Garage. Short tips for GSAC users.
I'm BB Pat. Welcome back to the GSAC Garage. This week, I'm going to be going over a very valuable function for us users of non-paperless geocaching devices. There is a special function in the Send to GPS dialog box that allows you to customize the output of the caches, and it has to do with special tags. For example, the waypoint name can have more than just the name or GC code. You can attach things as single letters for the cache type, for example, T for unknown, U for unknown, and so forth. You can also add the last four log types for the GSAC, such as N for DNF and F for found. This is done through a special tag. So for the waypoint, if you put percent code, then space, percent TYP1, another space, percent last four, it will fill up the waypoint name with the GC code, container type as a single character, and the last four logs as either an N or an F. The same can be done for your description. If you put percent CON1, percent hint, space percent DIF, another space percent TER, you will get one letter for the cache container size, the decrypted hint, and each of the difficulty and terrain values. This is my setup, and it works for me, but as we all know, everybody caches differently. You can add any type of special tag you want. Just bring up the help menu, do a search for special tags, and you will see the multitude of special tags you can put in both the waypoint name and the description. Well, this was this week's GSAC Garage. I'm VBPad. Happy caching, and see you later.
Just 2 weeks after their announcement of new high-end GPSRs, Garmin announced three new eTrex GPSRs on Tuesday. All three units, the 10, the 20, and the 30, support Garmin's paperless caching and high-speed USB. The eTrex 10 sports a sunlight-readable monochrome display at only $119.99. The eTrex 20 and 30 feature a 2.2-inch, 65,000-color display, but the 30 adds a 3-axis compass. The 20 lists at only $199.99, and the 30 comes in at $299.99. None of these models rely on the touchscreen, but rather the traditional joystick and buttons eTrex users are used to. We'll have links and more information to these new GPSRs in our show notes.
Garmin also announces new Rhino unit models today. The new 610, 650, and 655T models are all feature two-way radios and 2.6-inch color touchscreens with price tags of $349.99, $499.99, and $599, respectively. The new 610 includes a 1-watt FRS GMRS radio, while the 650 and the 655T use a 5-watt radio for up to a 20-mile range. The Rhino unit-to-unit transfer features and ANT Plus support. The 655T also adds topo maps and a 5-megapixel camera. Look for these new touchscreen GPSRs in the third quarter of this year, and a link to more information in our show notes.
Geocaching question of the day. The Bad Cop asks, you answer.
Hello, this is The Bad Cop, and welcome to the geocaching question of the day. Each weekday, I ask a geocaching-related question to my Twitter audience, and then summarize the replies and post it on my website. I hope this little project will keep you up to date on the ever-changing face of geocaching. Does the current price of gasoline affect how much you're geocaching? 49% of the cash-strapped geocachers, like myself, said yes, it does affect how much they're geocaching. So tell me, does the current price of gasoline affect how much you're geocaching? You want to find out all this and more? Come to my website, cachingnw.com, and follow me, The Bad Cop, on Twitter.
Tonight is our monthly cacher coffee, and basically what that is it's kind of like if we were all sitting around in a coffee shop and we were going to just be chatting about geocaching, and we were going to do all sorts of kind of like a meet and greet type of thing. That's what this episode is. So basically, if you're not with us normally during this, I unmute everybody that's on the phone and everyone can go ahead and chat with whatever they want to talk about here. We've got some topics. If you guys want to bring in that, whatever you want, go, that's fine. If you want to respond, go ahead and that's fine. If your line is dirty where I can hear you kind of bounce back and echoes, I'll go ahead and mute you. But we're going to go ahead and kick it off here with some feedback that we've heard from one of our listeners from a previous episode.
Listener feedback.
Hey, yeah, this is Team Smile Makers. Just a comment on that beta maps. I know as a visually impaired person that it's a lot harder to read than the other mapping system they had on the last update. So just a comment on that. So keep on caching. Bye.
Now, that was in reference to the geocaching.com beta maps with the ability with the just real tiny dots. That's what that is referring to there. So with that, though, we are going to be, again, kicking off our cacher coffee here. Now, Daryl, the first thing that we've seen this last week, a huge amount, is, you know, Garmin releasing new units. We've had Magellan doing some recently. Garmin's actually released a number of units and expected more. So is that, you know, kind of an indication that GPSRs are still going strong? That, you know, we've talked about the smartphone versus the GPSR recently. Is this a kind of an indication that we're going to be seeing a lot more, that they're still going strong? Or what do you think about this?
Yeah, I really do think that we're going to see, for at least the near future, some really good handheld units, because we talked about it, last week. There are a lot of nice features with the handheld units that, you know, the smartphones really don't do so well, especially when you get out of range for the smartphones, where you don't have that data connection. Things like the battery life is just, you know, better on a dedicated unit than, you know, these all-in-ones. But yeah, with the new eTrex coming out, the Montana, the Rhinos, the Magellan Explorers came out, you know, just recently. You know, and Garmin now has a broad range of handhelds from $120 up. And they've, you know, all new interfaces. It's all the new software. So, yeah, I think that we're really looking at not really a resurgence in the handheld market, but the handheld market's just really coming back strong again with, you know, some newer, more up-to-date offerings. It now supports a lot of the features that we really wanted out of the smartphone, like the paperless caching, you know, all the way down to the lowest end of the market. So, you know, I think they're coming back strong. And a lot of that incentive to use just the smartphone has been taken away by having these, you know, really good, high accuracy units that are cheap enough to supplement the smartphone. So, you know, you get a $200-$300 unit as well as your smartphone. You don't go and spend, you know, I think it was, $800 for the highest in Montana. You know, that's not something that most of us are really going to need if we have the smartphone to do the paperless.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it is nice to see these units that have a little bit better GPS in them. The battery life, like you talked about, is going to be, you know, enormously better. You know, I've noticed the same, you know, with my iPhone just in this last week, and with the Bad Elf that I had been talking about earlier. You know, you plug that in and it's got to power that GPS too, and it's just, it's not gonna last nearly as long as it is on a handheld. You know, I can go a whole day or more with a handheld just straight running, and with this I had to turn it off between you know caches. Once I found it, I just turned the screen off, because it's gonna, you know, take up more battery. And so, you know, again, you know, I don't want to reiterate completely the things that we talked about last week, because we did talk a lot about the smartphone versus the, you know, the GPSR. But it just, I think overall, it's nice to see these units that are, like you said, you know, it's going to be, they're cheaper units. They're, you know, just barely above $100. I mean, they range, you know, from 100 to 700 with this, you know, is Garmin's new broad range. You know, they've got a lot of different units, but you know, you can get a decent unit for $120, and you know, it's, you don't need all the things that the GPS Map 76 can do. You know, my GPS Map 76 can float. I mean, and granted, that's nice, and I paid more for that, but it's, you know, it's one of those things that I'm anxious to see all of the different units that are coming out. You know, it seems like, I'm wondering if the whole smartphone thing is driving the GPSR makers to make better and cheaper GPSRs.
Well, I would have to think it does. We have such a variety of these things out there now too. And I'm thinking for the smartphone guys, that capacitive touchscreen is a liability. You know, if you're out there with gloves on or, you know, climbing, you know, dirty hands, whatever, you don't really want a touchscreen. You want the joystick and the buttons. So you're getting a lot more of those joysticks and buttons coming back. And that's what that eTrex is. You know, we've seen the 78 is the replacement, I think, for yours, and then 62s.
Yeah.
So I think that the smartphones have really kind of driven them back to that rather than kind of steering toward the all touchscreens like it looked like Garmin had been doing. You know, the Oregon, the Dakota, it was all touchscreens, and that's where it looked like they were going. So I'm glad to see that we're seeing more of these physical controls coming back.
Well, and, you know, it is definitely interesting because, I do like the physical controls on the Map 76. The placement on it is a little bit weird, just above the screen. But I do like those, you know, because you have a physical response to it. Again, like you said, you can do it with gloves on. It's not as easy to just, you know, do that with the touchscreens. You can't just, you have to take your gloves off and things like that. And at least the screens that are like the iPhone. And so for that, and, you know, I've even tested, like we talked about the other day with the Magellan Explorist that I had, you know, it's mostly, there's some hard buttons on it, but mostly it's a touch interface. And, you know, it is definitely interesting to see the buttons. I like the buttons, and it's good to see those come back.
Yeah. Well, and the important thing too, is the touchscreens that they're using are those resistive touchscreens rather than capacitive. So it does register the button presses against the screen, you know, your finger against the screen through the gloves. You just have that problem of, you know, I have problems fat fingering on the iPhone because my fingers are big enough that, you know, it's just taking up too much space. Imagine that with gloves on. You know, you just have no idea sometimes where you're going to press. So that's the big deficiency there.
Yeah, and guys, feel free that if you want to put in anything into this topic, go ahead and just talk if you're unmuted. If not, go ahead and press the *8 key, and we'll try to get you unmuted. Some people are muted here tonight because of their phones are loud, but if you want to talk, go ahead and press *8. Now, Daryl, we've got some interesting good news that we've seen on a blog recently that the ET Highway could possibly be returning, or is going to be returning.
Yeah, it is definitely returning. They already have the event scheduled and posted. So I have the feeling some people are going to want to be making that trip out there. And I kind of wonder if they might not make mega event with that, with the fans of the ET Highway. And, you know, I would assume that these are going to be all new caches because all the old ones were archived again anyway. So a lot of those people are going to want to go back out and do it all over again.
Yeah, and the thing about this is, you know, I from what I understand, and this is was on the Fire and Ice blog that was published, and Fire and Ice is a reviewer. And then the other thing also is we are going to be having the Clay and Gus back on the show again, probably on the 15th. So not this next week, but the week after that, to talk a little bit about more what happened and how they worked with the department and things like that. But from my understanding, you know, they were working with them, and the Department of Transportation didn't actually have an issue with the caches themselves, but just the way that people were not pulling off the road and like that. So, you know, it'd be interesting to see how the new one is treated, to see if their restrictions put on them are, you know, farther away from the highway, things like that. You know, I've never been out to Nevada to see exactly how, you know, where you could place these things along the road, and if you can get them off farther than that. But, you know, I'm really interesting to talk about this with them.
Yeah, if you take a look at that Fire and Ice blog, he has some information about they didn't want some of them on the guardrails, presumably for the proximity to the road. So they did have some concerns that have been addressed and are, from what it sounds like, actually very pleased to be bringing it back. And, you know, they're doing the event at, I can't remember the name. It's the Little Alien. So I'm anxious to see what comes of that. And hopefully, you know, they'll have a great turnout and really show Nevada that, you know, geocaching can drive some revenue for them.
Yeah. And again, you know, this is one of those things that, you know, it'll be interesting to see from, you know, for other people to take it, other chambers of commerce and things like that too, because they'll, you know, with this, it's proved to them now what exactly has happened with the, you know, the bringing the commerce to the area. And so it'll be definitely interesting.
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, we're going to talk with the guys on the 15th, hopefully. And, you know, I'm sure they'll have a lot of good information. And a lot of it will apply to everyone, too, when they're placing caches. You know, I've often had some concerns about the placement of guardrail caches. You know, they are kind of dangerous in some cases. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I think all of us will be able to learn from on this ET highway business.
Yeah, and you know, it's one of those, it's kind of like LPCs. You know, some cachers love them, some cachers don't. We've heard, you know, a lot of different people say that, you know, they were really sad when the ET highway was archived, and then you know, there are a lot of people who are kind of happy for it because, you know, hey, it's the numbers run and it's not what caching is about and things like that. You know, so it'll be interesting to see what happens, and I'm interested to talk to them again. That should be on the show on the 15th. So if you guys want to join us for that, that'd be an awesome show.
Well, I got a question for you. You know, we had actually been talking about trying to meet up at one of the WWFMs, but were you able to find one in your area that you're going to do this year?
Actually, there's not one real close to me. The closest one is the Fort Wayne one, and we're just not going to be able to make it this year. Too busy, and with gas being $4.15, we're trying to save money for our Seattle trip. So actually, we're not going to make it to the WWFMs. You know, those of you who don't know what that is, that's the Worldwide Flash Mob. And it's a flash mob of geocachers. They're all around the country, all around different countries. And Daryl, you know, I've been to a few. I've not been to any recently. Are you going to be able to make one then?
Yeah, I am actually. There's one not too far from me. And the cool thing is it just happened to coincide with a ribbon cutting for a, we'll call it a refurbishment of one of the big bike trails in the area. The I-275 corridor back in the 70s had a bike trail built along next to it. And that was one of the first times that they had tried that kind of thing where, you know, they're taking the right of way for a major freeway and building, you know, pedestrian, you know, alternate use path next to it. And they made some mistakes. So 20, 30 years later, it was in really bad shape. They didn't expect to have to maintain it like it required or something. You know, I don't know all the details about it, but that whole bike path is being reopened and the ribbon cutting is on the 4th. They're doing a big, like convention kind of thing with the, you know, booths and whatnot. So the state geocaching organization here is doing their, booth there. And then, at the end of that event is the flash mob.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. It's going to be a bike themed flash mob. So that's right up my alley.
Yeah, it definitely is. Now, if anyone else is planning on going to a WWFM, want to talk about it, let us know here. You know, I find it, those are pretty cool events because it's short and you actually get to, you get to meet a lot of cachers and, but also kind of try to be tricky with your, with the way you're trying to avoid the crowds. So now for our next topic, I want to talk a little bit about the Bad Elf, you know, GPS, because I mentioned it earlier in the show that I got one and kind of wanted to let you guys know a little bit about it. You know, I've really only pulled it out of the package and played with it a little bit in my yard. So no caching with it yet because it just came in yesterday. But I like it. It's real small. And there's a picture that I posted on TwitPic this morning, and we'll go ahead and link to that in our show notes. It shows you the kind of size up compared next to a pen. It's small. I've read some reviews that say that they think that they're worried about it because they feel that it's going to break off at the end of their iPod. I didn't really feel like that. I mean, again, you're taking an iPod. If you're going to take it in the woods, I would be worried more about the iPod itself than the $99 dongle. So it's going to go. I am the bad cop in our chat room is asking if I'm using it with the iPhone or the iPod, and I am using it with the iPod. I don't really see much use for it for the iPhone since it already has a GPS in it, but I do like it. I mean, it seemed to find a satellite lock fairly quickly, and I mean, it has its upsides and downsides because it does add the GPS to it, but again, you're not going to have that data, so you won't have the maps like you would with the phone. So that's kind of my first initial review of it. It did seem to get a lock fairly quickly. I mean, not nearly as quickly as, say, a dedicated GPS unit would. I did have to, right out of the box, update the firmware and the satellite information on it, which was not a big deal. You just download an application and it does that all for you. So it's pretty cool. I mean, I wandered around in my house, and when I looked at the track log, it looks like I actually went through my house, not around it. But again, that's going to happen with pretty much any GPS. So, you know, in my testing, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take the iPhone, that, and my GPS, standalone GPS, maybe even two standalone GPSs, and record a track, record some different things, try to find all three with a geocache, see how close I was with each of them. It's kind of like, let you guys know what I think. But again, it's going to be, I mean, like you talked, Daryl, that it's so much cheaper than the cases that you've had before, you know, with the $250 case, or what was it? It was $250, right?
Well, the XGPS, I think, is down to about $200 now. And I want to say the, I have to go look it up again, but I want to say the Tough case is about the $200, $250 price range as well. But the difference is those actually have batteries. This one, as I recall, is just a GPS, so no additional battery power.
It does have a rechargeable battery in it. So I don't know if that's supposed to help with the drain from the phone.
I was going to say, I thought that was just to power its GPS.
And that might be. So, I mean, you're still going to get the drain off of it, but it won't power the actual phone or the iPod off of it. But, you know, it's interesting. I like it. I mean, a lot of the reviews that I've seen are people that are using it, they're pilots using it in the airplane with their iPad for some flight software. So it'll be interesting to see as a cacher, you know, if it's going to be specific enough for us to be able to find caches.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of interesting stuff happening with the iPads in the cockpits lately too. So yeah, I can definitely see where that's going to be of much more value, since if you're flying at any kind of altitude, the 3G functions that are required to get the GPS right now, you know, those don't work at all when you're at 30,000 feet.
No. Now, you know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, with the cache, if it's able to do the caches, because I was sitting on my porch. I had it just sitting there for a little bit, and you know, it would do the drift. It would drift around for a while, and then it would settle, and then it would drift around for a while and settle. So it'll be interesting to see if it's good enough to do the caching with, you know, and even compared with the iPhone. You know, I take it for granted. I haven't really done much caching with the iPhone yet. I found one this past weekend, and one or two, and so. Or we hunted for two, we didn't find the one. But, you know, I don't really have taken much a look and see how accurate that is. And so for this, it'll be interesting to see how that compares.
Now, we were talking a little bit earlier about how cash prices have kind of diminished caching, and I definitely have seen that here. I know you were complaining you're not looking at going to that flash mob because of the gas prices, and we've just not made some of the trips for one or two caches that we kind of wanted to do lately for that very reason. It's just so expensive to drive, you know, an hour or two and to only get a few caches just doesn't seem worth it anymore.
Yeah. And, you know, it's the same thing. Someone was asking me if I'm going to be going to Midwest Geobash too. And I'm actually going to be dropping that one from this year too, because we, you know, we just can't with our trip to Seattle, and, you know, we're hoping to do a lot of caching out in Seattle and hit, you know, the Groundspeak and hopefully, you know, do the three caches that are out there, the main ones. But, you know, it's just one of those things that we just can't afford to do both or all of the things that we want to do because there's so much. But, you know, it brings a good point though, because we can use our tools and with pre-planning the caches too. You know, I've in previous years have done big cache runs and try to get multiple caches in a day. And I do a lot of routing and try to, you know, make sure that I hit the best route while doing that so I can get the most caches in the day. The same thing applies here, and you can use GSAC to do that, and you can use, you know, plenty of other things too. But it's important to kind of pre-plan your trip so that way you can get the best gas mileage out of your car. You know, you're not wandering around trying to go from cache to cache, just deciding what's the closest, what's the best way to go, and then doing a lot of backtracking here. So it's one of those things that, you know, pre-planning this time of year, especially with the gas prices so expensive, is a good thing.
Oh, definitely.
Hey, X-Punk-X?
Yes.
I'm just wondering right now with the ET highway open back up and gas prices the way they are, if it's going to have a slow start.
That's a very good question. You know, we'll have to see, but I have the feeling that that's one of those ones because of the cache density that people are just going to want to do it no matter what.
Yeah, and they're supposed to be adding more caches, making it larger.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Route 66 one, I want to say, came close to ET Highway, but wasn't quite there. So I have the feeling that they're kind of compelled to make sure that they have the largest power trail. So they want to make sure to improve the cache density. Well, and there were people who were saying that they did it in 2 days with time to spare. So, you know, maybe they're packing it in at the one end to make it more of a 2 day run that's, you know, wall to wall.
Yeah.
It'll definitely be interesting.
Yeah, I definitely want to see what the actual turnout for that big event is, because it has become such an icon, and there had been that controversy over it, and it was brought back by popular demand. So, you know, the question is, you know, what is the response going to be for its second time around? It's like ET Highway, the sequel.
Now, we do have in the chat room, Freak Casher has said, what do you guys think of underground urban caching, like as in urban spelunking? So, and he says like storm drains and things like that.
Oh, you know, this is kind of one of those things. I would really love to partake of some of the urban exploration kind of stuff, but yeah, it really does have a lot of dangers, and the authorities would rather that we not do it for some very valid reasons. You know, some of them are, you know, they don't know what you're doing down there and you could be a terrorist, and others are, you know, what happens if you happen to severely injure yourself or get trapped or something like that? You know, you're not going to have a good time getting out of there if you can't tell people where you are, and your phones and stuff like that don't work sometimes. So it is a interesting thing that I kind of want to try, but at the same time, yeah, it may be a little too risky, and the authorities are definitely not going to look too kindly on it, so I've not done it myself.
And Dudley Grunt in our chat room says permission for these caches seems to be highly unlikely. You know, like, especially who you're going to go to and say, hey, can I hide something in your storm drain? Like, I just don't think that type of thing would be allowed. I mean, I may be wrong. There may be places that can, but I would be 9 times out of 10 think that would not be approved.
Yeah. Well, there may be some of those where they are, and if so, great. But there was one that someone tried to post in an abandoned train station in this area that I really would like to have done, but it is on private property and they do have security guards that chase you out. So, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me for placing a cache there.
Now, I've seen pictures of that train station that you're talking about, and it seems like a fun place to be in, though.
Yeah, and that's actually the Michigan Central Depot in downtown Detroit that was also featured in the original Transformers movie, or I should say the original Michael Bay Transformers movie. So it is an icon for kind of that rundown. And the interesting thing is, they built that building and it was never fully utilized.
Oh, really?
So it was, yeah, it was one of those kind of overreaching railroad projects at the end of World War II, and they never got the traffic back at the end of World War II, so it just kind of never went anywhere. Beautiful building, though.
Yes, yes. Now, anything else that we want to talk about here tonight before we close the show? It's been a fun Cash or Coffee, and it's good to see you guys come out and hang out with us tonight. Anything else, guys, before we close? All right, if there's nothing else, then I want to thank you guys for hanging out with us tonight. Thanks for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. We want to thank cacheatnight.com for sponsoring this episode. Join us each Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time on the TalkShoe service. You can call in live at 724-444-7444. Our TalkCast ID is 7525. Our show notes and links to all of our past shows can be found at geocachingpodcast.com. You can call our voicemail line, and we'd love to hear from you, our listener. That number is 206-350-3GPS anytime to leave us a voicemail. Have a safe week and happy caching.